Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Metaverse Podcast. This is episode 50. We're going to go ahead and call that live show episode 49. I'm Jero, joined by Fo Shizzle.
Hey, what's up?
Skyline.
Hello.
Overcool.
Hey, everyone.
And Min.
Hello.
We will be talking about the fall 14 season. But right before I get to that, I want to ask about the live show thing to the listeners out there, because we thought the first one went pretty well, and we'd like to do some more, maybe make it a recurring thing in the future, hopefully do something next month with Metaverse Live. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a poll up on the post for this podcast asking which days of the week you would prefer us to record them, so that maybe you could watch live or tune in or whatever. So that poll will be up on the Metaverse episode 50 post. Now we get on to the fall 14 season. Pretty much everything has at least 3 episodes at this point. I think the only exception is Mushishi. Are there any other shows that have just 2 so far? Twin Tails, does that have 3?
Yeah, three.
Yuki Yuna, I believe that has 3 too.
Yeah, it just came out.
Mm-hmm. All right, good. 2 days. Yeah, so the so-called free episode rule, whether we follow it or not, it's one of the most popular rules of anime. So by this point, we have enough of a feel of what we liked and what we didn't like. So we're going to get started on the negative side of things, get all that negative energy out of the way, and start with the garbage of the season. And of the things that I've watched, I don't really have anything that I feel is terrible. Now, this is from... I've watched most of the season. There are some shows that I just knowingly avoided. But even then, I think for people that are fans, that, you know, they're going to like it. I don't think there's anything that's really just horrible or vile. Even Crossand, a show that I think isn't necessarily good, is still entertaining to me in a sense. So
I think it's good.
Yeah, it's kind of a cop-out answer in a way, but I don't really have anything that's garbage this season.
Right, yeah. Your spider sense was like, nope, I know this show's going to be bad. You skipped it. So I know you don't really watch a lot of the season, the whole stuff. I mean, you know, that's fine.
I try my best to sort of plan out before I watch a season. I actually have an Excel spreadsheet with a calendar. I have my nice watch list planned through spring 2015.
That's so organized. I wish, wow, I was that dedicated.
That is. That's incredible.
Or that is obsessive and horrible to have that.
Obsessive is incredible.
Fosh, got some garbage to throw out.
Yeah. You know, one show in particular, I know it's not the real translated name for it, but In Search of the Lost Future. It's a weird show about, like, I guess it's got a blend of, like, CG, 2D artwork, and it's kind of a weird story. I guess it's kind of a romance supposed to be, and they throw in this weird twist at the beginning, first episode, that when this main dude confesses to this girl, she leaves and gets killed, and for some reason they do a time travel thing where they go back, I guess, a week before it happens, to try to prevent, I guess, her from getting killed. And they use this, I guess, little Wally girl. She shows up, and she's, I guess, from the future or something, and I guess she's supposed to prevent the other girl from getting killed. I was kind of really, really confused on what they're doing with that series. Mm-hmm. But if your first episode, it was very shocking to see the girl get killed, but I heard, you know, through many people that watched it, that something happened in the first episode that catches people off guard. But even that didn't really... You know, they don't really see it, but it's just kind of usual anime thing. It's like, oh, mm-hmm, someone gets killed first episode, and now they're going to explain why they get killed and what, you know, why they're so important. But yeah, I was just finding myself pretty much bored after the second and third episode.
I admit I was confused by the ending of the first episode where, mm-hmm, you mentioned about the girl dying, and then the ending credits was sort of a going back in time thing, but I don't think there was a transition. Like, I guess I kind of understood what was going on, but I was confused that that's what they did with the ending. And it just all of a sudden we're watching the same scenes, and then here comes this lowly girl.
Right. It almost feels like it would be an endless eight scenario here where we're probably going to be seeing the same thing, you know, every other week, you know, this girl's gonna die. And they do mark the calendar, it's like something, I guess 14 something, when she gets killed, so it's almost like they're, you're gonna see that scene eventually again. But my experience with time travel, you know, we've all seen Steins Gate, you know, if you prevent someone from getting killed, they're gonna get killed some other way. So it's like, no matter what's gonna happen, she's gonna get killed no matter what, I think. I mean, that's interesting, but yeah, like I said, I found myself kind of bored. I don't really care about any of the characters so far, and yeah, there's one character in the series that he annoys me. He's I guess he's an American transfer student, and he speaks in like broken Japanese, broken English. It's just, it's very annoying at times. Almost like TK from Angel Beats, but not as cool. You know, it's just says random phrases like "oh no" and like "okay, Joseph Joestar did it better than you, so stop." Like
that. "I want to hold you tight" or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's what he says. I'm like,
oh god.
And he thinks he has a girlfriend named Jennifer that he has a picture of. That I'm like, okay, I don't even care. I don't care about this guy. Like, I wish he was the one who got killed in the first episode. Maybe he'll die next time. So I don't know. We'll see.
All right, Rukul, what are you putting in the garbage bin?
I would have to toss out Gugure Kukure-san. So it's not, I don't know if I would say, garbage is a bit of a harsh word, but I don't really want to call anything garbage that I haven't actually seen and tried first. And Gugure Kukure-san just didn't really pique my interest. So essentially it's just a comedy show about a little robot girl who lives alone. And one day she calls Kokuri-san, who is basically just a fox, a hot guy who's a fox, lucky her. And he's supposed to be able to answer her questions. But he doesn't really have any powers aside from being able to cook really well. And the whole show just revolves around them living together, him trying to get her to be normal, and her just basically being terribly mean to him. And it was kind of okay in the first episode, and then I kind of followed to the second episode because the ending song was really cute, but it just kind of devolved into a bunch of pedophile jokes. So they introduced this dog character, and he's madly in love with Kohina and wants to marry her, and it's just all a bunch of jokes about him basically trying to get in her pants. And from there, that's not really what I want to watch. That's not funny to me. So I'm giving the garbage award to Gugure Kukure-san.
Yeah, I can understand all that.
In an attempt to kind of like get a hand in front of the garbage bin to deflect this paper wad, by the third episode, they kind of toned down a little bit on the horrible pedophile jokes, thankfully. The characters toned down a little bit. They play up, it's a 4-comma adaptation, so they play up the jokes like insane when you first get introduced to them. And then it kind of settles down into a regular pattern. You know, right now, it's Kohina is pretty attached to Kokuri at this point.
Right, yeah, because
there are some heartfelt moments, definitely, that they managed to work in, and those are pretty good.
It's gotten a little better than that, but you know, I'll miss this paper wad and into the trash it goes. Oh,
yeah, I don't want to have to get through a bunch of pedo jokes to get to the good stuff. I just wanted to be all good stuff.
I did get annoyed with the dog and the fox kind of going at it every episode. I'm like, okay, that joke's been used. It's old and busted. Stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much. Yeah.
Min, what show are you throwing out?
So this is, I'm going to say Le Fruit de la Grisaille, or Grisaille no Kajitsu.
Fruit of the Loom animation.
Yeah, I can't say it's like pure garbage, but that, after the first episode, the first episode I'll say was, I watched it kind of feeling like, wow, this is terrible. This is just the main character going from girl to girl, introducing in just like the most cliche visual novel way possible. And then it ends with, that episode ends with this really interesting hook showing all the characters kind of in their own rooms. And you see them taking out things like sniper rifles, pipe bombs, and other such weaponry. And I'm watching this, I'm thinking, okay, there's something under this, right? Like, okay, the setup felt incredibly stereotypical visual novel, and that and the reason for that was because we're going to see something explode. Like, coming out of this. That was the whole setup. But I think now we're four episodes in, I think. Mm-hmm. And not a whole lot's happened. The main character is just going to school, chatting with these really crazy girls. And it's the exact same sort of thing you see in any other harem anime, except these girls seem to be even stupider or quirkier in different ways. And okay, that can be interesting, but so far it's not. I'm not sure where it's going, and I want to see them whip out those bombs and sniper rifles and see, you know, what that's all about. So I gotta say, you know, I'm still watching it. I want to know what happens, but it is this is not the right pacing. Like there should have been something already by four episodes.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Min on that. Is the first episode is what hooked me into it, like him, and they haven't really touched on that at all these last three episodes. I'm like, when are they gonna get to that part where, you know, they explain why these girls are at this school and, you know, why they're so, you know, special and everything. So it does seem kind of, like you said, very slow. I mean, I'm just waiting to see what they do with it.
Even without the weapons, that's a good question. Like, why are these six people going to a secluded school just by themselves?
Right, by themselves. Like, is this a summer school type thing, or is it just because they're a danger to society, so they got to be kept away somewhere else? I don't know. Something.
Yeah,
that
something.
They're not telling us.
Yeah. Sounds like Danganronpa.
A little bit. Might be. I mean, they haven't killed each other yet, so I'm waiting for that.
Hopefully.
Yeah, it's frustrating that they have such a good mystery, and then you have to get through all this panty shots. And
I would say that the comedy is pretty good, though. I like the comedy.
Yeah, it's pretty cute, actually.
I do like Michiru, the blonde girl.
The twin-tail girl?
Tsundere.
Yeah.
She's funny.
The fake Tsundere.
Yeah.
I like the little sister character. She's so gullible. Everything you say to her, she believes. It's hilarious.
And she can make anything in a flash. Any kind of clothing item, she can just like make in seconds flat.
Yeah, the maid. Oh, jeez. Mm. Like, no wonder she's making bombs. She can craft anything.
Well, I had seen the first episode, and I kind of liked it. It's not totally surprising to hear you guys say that not much has really happened in the first four episodes, but I was kind of planning to wait for the Blu-rays to release, and hopefully by that time, in you know, seeing what Smiley says as he's covering it on Metanorn, to just kind of see what he thinks as the series progresses and if it's has worth to watch later on. All right, Skyline, the garbage bin is about full. You might need to push some stuff down to get your show in there. Maybe you can take Gray out to make room.
I think I'll save the lowly. What the hey? La Cucaracha. Terraform Mars.
Yes, that's better.
Just, you know, it kind of felt like it had that Attack on Titan vibe going into it, but it was just wholesale slaughter by the second episode. And the blogosphere has already discussed the insipid amounts of censoring on it. And then I hear that they're removing some of the censoring on it. But that being the case, even if they remove the censoring, they're taking away negative and it just gets it right back to zero again. It's really bad writing. Characters you can't even get into because they're going to die in some horrible, grievous fashion, and not with any of the cool factor that Attack on Titan brought to it, or any of the kind of suspense for what suspense there was in Attack on Titan. So yeah, this one goes right into the trash bin.
So in other words, don't go to Mars if you're an anime, because Mars is always bad, apparently.
Except in Aria.
Yeah, I mean, some shows do.
You're already on Mars in Aria.
So it's when the roach is going to appear in Aldno Zero. I mean, they're on Mars. Are they going to? They're appearing.
True.
Or maybe instead of throwing it away, just stomp on it and grab
spray
it.
Spray Raid?
Yeah, spray with Raid.
Flush it. The only thing I will say is that the idea of it was kind of interesting. I mean, the idea that the humans have to go to Mars and they have to, you know, use the bug DNA to like create a superhuman. So they have to use half human, half bug DNA to combat these roaches. It's kind of interesting. I mean, I thought that was kind of cool, but as Skyline said, it doesn't really, even that doesn't really add much. I mean, censorship wise, for me, it takes away from like the reason watching it. I mean, I want to watch it because, you know, I kind of want to see the gore or anything, because everyone hypes it up in the manga that it gets so violent and so gory that it kind of, that's why people watch it. But even though you said taking the senses away, it's not really going to improve the story. So I kind of agree on that.
I saw one picture of the censorship and it covered maybe 80% of the screen.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I think first episode when he's fighting the bear, the whole scene, you can't even see it. And it's all black. It's like, okay.
Yep. Why bother animating this for television?
Pretty much how I feel. I'm like, if you can't get a time slot where you can get it uncensored, which is the whole reason to watch it, it's like, well, then why even air it? But yeah, I guess you just want to get it out there.
I know we've talked about this many times with like ecchi shows, but for these shows that have violence, what's the benefit?
JoJo.
JoJo too. Well, JoJo is much more popular. Or Terraformers is a good manga, but what's the benefit of putting these shows on these networks that aren't gonna, you know, really show the episode? Like, what is the net gain there? I mean, your show is on a popular Blu-ray network. Yeah, Blu-ray, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I was just wondering, I mean, what's the point?
Ghoul had the same problems, I think, when that was out. It's all censorship. That people just are like, eh, I'm not really going to watch it because it's not fun.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what's the point?
Mean, yeah, they're not going to get money for people viewing it on TV, though, so I think it's, they need to put it on TV just so that people know it exists, and then they buy the merch.
Yeah, I think it's maybe for that, and maybe to push the manga, too, so that people read the manga. Like, you know, this is bad. Why don't you read the manga?
But I wonder, Min, you're right about the TV thing, but I do wonder, like, you know, because first impressions mean so much nowadays, you see that and you go, well, I really can't even see the episode. Then you might lose potential buyers.
Some of them might not be converted, but I think on net, you know, that's better than not being seen.
That's true.
Well, I can't necessarily buy that when you get right down to it, because censoring it might soften the blow. What censoring does to me, other than being annoying, is for some people that you might be trying to keep if they're a bit squeamish. The thing about it is people's minds work through blocking. And so that big old censor bar, you can't see what directly is going on in there. So the people's worst imaginations are now kind of forced to take it a hold. So it might even be more gory than what is actually shown on screen.
Yeah.
That, and I despise censorship in all ways, shapes, or forms. I mean, we have a network where word travels fast, and, you know, if it gets out there that, hey, this is gory, you might not want to watch it, they're probably not going to watch it anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so we move on to our next category, which is tried but couldn't like it, meaning we watched a couple episodes and we've dropped it by this point because it just wasn't bringing enough for us. Fosh, get us started.
Yeah, I'll start with World Trigger. I mean, when I saw the first trailers for it, I was like, oh, this is going to look really cool. It's like a, you know, humanity thing where the monsters are attacking and the humans got to fight back with whatever they can, you know, superpowers and everything. But animation-wise, I mean, it's come from Toei, and they always get the bad rep of, you know, having crap animation for most of their shows. And, you know, I'm a fan of their work, but I can see why World Trigger is kind of bland. It's very boring. A lot of characters don't really, you know, I don't get any feelings from most of the characters that I don't get. I'm not attached to anyone. Mm-hmm. And, like, the main kid, he's got, I don't know his name, but I think Yuma or whatever. He's kind of boring. I mean, he always has a stupid, dumb expression on his face that just tells me that the artists are lazy. And they're like, I don't want to draw the face. I'm just going to do this goofy expression. That's his expression for the rest of the series. It's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And the monsters are, like, basically CGI, but the monsters don't look that bad, but they're not that great looking either. And the only thing I would say that made me laugh seriously so far is that, you know, Kikaji's in the series and he's famous for always losing an arm in his shows, and actually in episode 3 he actually does lose an arm in the episode. Well, like, not his physical body, but they make a digital copy of themselves, but still he gets his arm blown off, and I just thought that was hilarious.
Every
I don't know why
time.
They
That's yeah, amazing.
I'm wondering that too. It's very funny how it happens. Because it happened in Black Bullet too, and I was like, okay, that's weird. Because it's the same guy.
I wonder anybody's ever asked him about that at like some convention or something. Like,
I don't know. I would if I could. Oh,
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I've never heard of any other voice actor or actress having one having character that kind that's, of... specific, that specific thing.
I saw a video on crack.com recently where they have like movie stars, not like just like actors, but movie stars like Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, all the big stars. They all do the same thing in all their movies. Like Tom Cruise runs everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Parkour is everywhere too. You know, Tom Hanks, apparently enough, always has a scene where he's urinating or talking about peeing.
Right.
Huh. So you just have to look for it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Something.
Have to... So yeah, I mean, and, World Trigger, so not that great.
Alright, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I read some of that manga, and
yeah, me too.
I admit that I'm kind of surprised by its popularity in Shonen Jump, because I don't, as much as I read of the story, I didn't think it was really good. And seeing what people said about what Toei did in the first couple episodes, a lot of still shots for too long periods of time.
Yeah, there was.
It's exceptionally bad production quality. All right. Like, usually I would, even if something is poorly animated, I would still try, but it's actually so bad, it's kind of off-putting. So.
Yeah, for me, it's like when the two main characters are the least likable characters in the series, you got a problem, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel with them. They're both really boring.
I recalled what did you try but couldn't like.
So this was already in our garbage bin. I picked Terraformers. And mostly for the same reasons Skyline said. Not only does it censor things so much that you literally can't see pretty much anything on screen. It's either blacked out or whited out or blurred or something. And even if you take all that censoring away, there's really not that great of a story behind that. The pacing is ridiculously fast. From what I understand, they've skipped a lot of chapters from the manga and just kind of throttled ahead forward so that I don't even remember who the characters are. I think I might try the uncensored version, but I don't think it's really going to hold up all that well, even when I can see what's going on.
All right. Yeah.
All right, so I picked Parasite, which, like Grisaya no Kajitsu, which I chose for the last section, I can't say it's like a terrible show, and I haven't dropped it. But, like, I don't know, after kind of a pretty exciting first couple episodes, I guess, I'm starting to... I don't know, kind of lose interest, even though, I mean, things are happening, but for some reason, I just can't really care too much about, like, the main character and his right hand, Migi. It's pretty nice hearing Aya Hirano again, although it's not like a great role for her, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's not Haruhi, that's for sure.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'll keep watching just to see what happens, but I feel like I'm kind of going through the motions at this point.
Yeah, so the one thing about that show is... Go ahead, sorry, Skyler.
It sounds like that's where Aya Hirano is going for her roles right now. Weird creatures. She had Migi at one point, and then earlier on she had, Weird Space Panda from Gatchaman Crowds.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, yeah, she was there. Wow. I was going to say the one thing that annoys me is that... Yeah.
It was also a pretty terrible role for her.
Yeah, he was annoying as hell.
Yeah, that was a terrible character.
I was going to say, with Parasite, I always hear the right hand, I can't fap jokes. I'm like, oh, okay, come on, stop. Every week that show, I'm like, could you stop?
I mean, it's the opposite. Yeah. You can fap, like, incredibly well.
It's a weird show. I mean, I kind of like to agree with Min on some of that stuff, yeah.
I'm actually surprised you picked Parasite, because I've been really enjoying it. But I can see how you can find the main character not quite as interesting as he could be. He's kind of a bland guy.
Yeah, that is one thing. He's kind of a downer. Really excited. It's two.
I don't know. I'm in it for the crazy aliens.
Yeah.
It's got a Men in Black feel to it, I think. That's why I think when I watch it. Look at that dog in the first episode. I'm like, oh, God. It's kind of creepy. Then when it was flying in the air, I'm like, no one sees this thing flying in the air in the middle of the day. It's like, oh, bat.
Well, you just you just dropped Men in Black. Remember what he said about Men in Black? People miss out of their head what they don't want to have to take into account.
Yeah, they're like, it's a common animal. It's the pterodactyl dog creature. It's common around here.
Cut to some bum in an alleyway, tossing a bottle of booze in the trash can, you know?
Probably, yeah.
Skyline, how about you?
In our garbage bin, put in there by Fosh. I'll take another look, but I'll put it right back in Search of Lost Future. It seems to have an interesting idea and a nice little theme going for it, and some interesting characters, too. I just feel that overall, out of the two episodes I watched, it just felt like it was rather ham-fisted. It didn't feel like it had all the parts. It just didn't feel like it was assembled right. Nothing was put in the right place necessary to make me able to take a look at it as a coherent whole. It kind of felt just jumbly.
And for my I tried but couldn't like that would be Mana no O to Vanadis. I had already watched the first episode kind of feeling like, you know, we've seen this, you know, before, this situation guy and these girls, and it's a harem and stuff. And then, but I was kind of entertained. I liked the main female character. I can't remember what her name was.
Eleonora.
Okay, thank you. And I was like, I'll give it another chance. Although, admittedly, I was kind of on the downslope by the time the second episode came out. And then you get that whole thing with Tigris-sama, that maid girl.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's where it kind of was like, I'm out. I don't know if I can really enjoy this for the remaining episodes. It just seems like typical light novel, harem, ecchi stuff that I've seen before, and I'd rather pass on it.
Yeah, I was like going to say that, and then the maid with the worst name ever.
Tita.
I'm like, okay. So obviously, bad. You're hinting at something. Like, come on. Worst character.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this is a Japanese novel, so it's not necessarily a connection they'd make. So this is a show I'm blogging for Metafab, and surprisingly enough, three episodes in, it's actually not very typical harem anime. I mean, yeah, the second episode had some truly awful bits, mainly surrounding Tita, and yeah, she is a terrible character. I can't stand her, and it sucks that according to the third episode, she's going to be around a little more.
Oh yeah,
but,
she is.
what I've been surprised is just how much of a focus the show has on the politics. It basically all of the third episode is just about Tigre and Eleonora kind of figuring out their place the fourth episode. Sorry, after they, you know, after she invades Tigre's country, and they, you know, that obviously causes political fallout, and them exploring what their options are now and negotiating with other players in this. So it suddenly becomes this kind of political thriller rather than so much a harem. Now, there are, you know, very scantily clad hot women, including the main woman, of course. But, and there's been extra such characters added on, but it's like, I'm actually shocked that they're not like harem member girls. It's like it actually feels like they're characters with agency and power and motivations and stuff. And I've just been pleasantly surprised by this show.
I like those bits, and then you get to the, like the latest episode, the girl got bit by a snake on the chest, so he has to grab her and like suck the poison out. I'm like, wow.
That is a great shot, because he's doing that, and one of his hands is just right on top of her breast, and there's no reason for it to be that way, because he's sucking it from her like collarbone area.
Yeah.
There's no reason for him to grab her breast, but you know.
Who's that guy? I think he is Meliodas.
He's like, I got this. He's like, my chance to shine. I got this.
The venom would spread quicker through that sort of tissue, so you have to squeeze it out.
Well, see, he's grabbing the other breast, though. It's not
right,
the breast
not
that...
The that
just
was...
to be sure, that one might be poison, yeah. too. You never know. Yeah.
You
gotta check both.
You got to give the pacing some time. So, I mean, he would work over to the next one. It's a plot. It's all a plot.
it's
he's a doctor.
For me. Yeah, exactly. He's a doctor. Yeah. He knows what he's doing. Steve Irwin over here.
You,
you know?
You got one breast growth out of the deal, and you're complaining about not getting two. Anonymous fan. So self-entitled.
That's true, Dad. We move on to our next category, which is better than I thought. This is show, you know, maybe... weren't expecting much of at the beginning, but hey, we're kind of digging it now. Overcourt, how about you?
For me, that show would be Garo, mostly because I watched Samurai Flamenco, which was also a tokusatsu show, and it was just so bad. I had so much faith in that show. I thought it was going to get better for maybe like 10 episodes until I finally gave up. So I was kind of burned out from those kinds of shows for a while, and hearing that this was going to be another show of the same genre, I was kind of really skeptical about it. I didn't think much. The story sounded really typical about knights and demons, so you know, I pretty much, my expectations were at zero, and then I actually watched it and it managed to buck all the horrible trends of the genre while embracing all the good ones. And it's just a really fun show because it doesn't take anything too seriously. It has fun with it, you know. It runs with the whole tokusatsu concept and superheroes fighting crime, and just has a good time. And you know, in an episode, a girl catches a punch with her teeth. So that's all I need. Wow. To...
I've seen teeth. Some of that, yeah. I mean, I like some of it, but the thing I don't like about it is maybe the CGI and suits. I'm like, they could have done maybe animation on it, but I can see why. I mean, it does look kind of cool when you hit the fire and stuff in there with it. So.
They look really good, actually, those CGI suits. I'm usually not a fan of CGI in anime because it looks so weird, but they actually fit in really well. I'm pretty impressed.
It reminds me of Cardos. Did any of you see that?
Yeah, it's very much like that, yeah.
With the CG stuff and the crazy action, I wonder if they can keep that up throughout the course of the series, because I saw the first episode and I didn't really... you know, have that much interest in continuing, but what I saw, I thought, hey, this is pretty good. It was better than what I would have expected for a show that, admittedly, I'm not continuing, but it looked pretty good.
Right, yeah. It's very Cars. Is that in the fantasy world, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Might want to pick it up again.
Yeah. I might. Min, what was better than you thought?
So, for this, I chose the other show I'm covering on MetaFab, which is going to be The Twin Tale. And, I mean, I guess to an extent it met my expectations, but in the sense that I kind of knew going in that it would be a kind of a silly, stupid comedy about love for Twin Tales. But I think so far, 3 episodes in, it's just been, every episode's been pretty funny. I really like the how it's setting things up. I like the direction the story's going, with the main character becoming a huge celebrity because she is going around saving the earth, and she is spreading Twin Tail love throughout the world. And you know, that's, I really like how that's like tying into the main theme of this show, which of course is Twin Tails are awesome, or Twin Tails are the best. So, you know, that's what I really wanted to see explored, and that, you know, that's what I'm seeing. On top of that, I actually didn't know going in that this would be a gender bender, you know, like Kempfer, where the guy turns into a girl in order to, become superpowered and fight. So, that's always a bonus for me, I guess. That is usually pretty funny. So, yeah, it's not like, you know, a deep show or anything, but I've had a lot of fun with it every episode.
Yeah, it's very funny. The villains are funny. They're like they're like Saturday morning Power Ranger villains. Each of them are kind of
exactly
doing it for their own reason, yeah. They're like, I'm doing it because I like dolls, or I like ribbons and all this stuff. It's just so, each character has this weird thing that they like, and I guess it's what they're trying to show, that you can like all these different things, like, you know, you're passionate about certain things. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, you said camphor, that part did catch me off, so surprised. I'm like, oh, didn't know that, but yeah, I guess it works. But there's one episode, a part where he's like in the shower, he's about to, you know, explore his new body, and he's playing with the twin tails instead. And I thought that was just hilarious. Yeah. All the girls are like, I want to see what he's going to do. And he's getting ready to take off his uniform and starts playing with the hair. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So funny.
Just listening to you guys talk about it seems like one of those shows where, you know, we've seen so many shows that are like each other that you kind of think of, like, how can you put it sort of a modern twist on this? How can you do something a little different from what we've seen in, you know, just like a gender bent twin tail going around and spreading twin tails love. It kind of sounds kind of unique.
Yeah, it is weird. For me, it's always like, it surprises me how they can take something so simple like all twin tails and making a series based around that. Yeah. Like, they can make anything out of any anime, I swear. I mean, we see battleships are like nullified girls, that, you know, that's a thing. So I got all these different things you can make anime about, whatever you want, basically.
Sky, what was better than you thought?
Crossong. You know, going through the first episode, it was kind of really troperific and really silly. Some of the things were just kind of falling apart. And by the time the second or third episode came around, that hasn't really necessarily changed. But behind it, I'm kind of detecting some world building that's going on, some characterizations, and different things that are actually happening. It's just by three episodes, it's not necessarily clicking as well as it could. I always feel that maybe in different scriptwriters' hands, they could actually make these things work a little bit, maybe expand the range on it just a little bit more to make everything function perfectly like it should. But as of right now, it feels like it's kind of fumbling.
Yeah, that's towards where you whatever, see the limitations of Sunrise's writing skill.
Oh, really? having little to any experience with any of the Sunrise franchises, I can't really say about that much. But if that's typical for them, oh well.
Yeah, that branches their MMO on most of their shows. Especially if it's going to be a long series, you have to be sitting for like a little long wait, which is like Gundam Retcon's doing that right now. They're not going to explain everything right away. They're going to give you little bits here and there. And Crossing is interesting. I mean, like you said, it's better than I thought it would be. I was expecting another Valve-rape clone, which it kind of is in some parts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of rape. That's what I was going to say. And since they're in a prison, you know, it's all these girls trying to get each other. And I like the parts of the prison so far where it's like all the girls have the hidden agenda. Like, I'm going to get back at her. And that part is always interesting to me. But Ange, everyone keeps calling her a bitch character. That she's the—I haven't even seen her. They've been saying she's the worst character of the season. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, for me, it's character development. It's not going to happen overnight. That's how I feel with her.
Yeah.
I mean, in some cases, it's a bit too quick. Some of the character development. I mean, she pretty much turns on a dime, going from want to die or, you know, in combat to like saying, okay, now I'm going to do this thing, and all of a sudden she becomes super competent. That's a little bit too quick to happen, but I'd rather it happen a little bit too quick than to see it drug out. Over episode two, it was drug out enough.
Or in a couple episode span where she was nervous about being pushed out of a locker room naked to, my clothes are coming apart, but I don't really care.
Right. She's like, yeah, whatever, I don't care.
You know,
she's a nasty princess.
I'm genuinely enjoying this show as like it's a pure exploitation piece of work, but
it definitely is.
I feel like from episode one, I really liked it. Just how that episode went, where she starts out as this princess who's just a complete C-word with how she treats Norma, and then, you know, the transformation into her becoming a Norma, or finding out that she is, and then, you know, of course it ends with that rape scene. And just her going from all the way to the top, from the top all the way to rock bottom, and then, you know, just continues in the next episode. I feel like it just doesn't let up with its really exploitative, ridiculous, rapey plot devices, imagery, what have you.
Wow, and y'all I have terrible taste.
Yeah. And I'm just
I
having
seen
a lot
this
of
show,
fun.
So I'm just like basing it on your description. It sounds terrible.
Like into like Yuri fandom and stuff like that, but it's not. I mean, this is not happy sex in any way, shape, or form.
No.
This
well, there is some there's some consensual lesbian love.
Yeah, and it's like news episode.
It feels forced.
I mean,
really
yeah,
forced,
it's more like they're I don't know. It's not love. Really.
No, no, definitely
not love. One who lives, you know. I mean.
Yeah, it's like an activity for them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more about power play than anything else.
Yeah.
It's more about dominance, which is
yeah.
not a very comfortable subject matter to explore, but I think they're exploring it without over-exploiting it. Exploitation is fine, but over-exploitation, just to make people pay attention to it and maybe get their rocks off on it, that's terrible.
Well,
that's
maybe,
absolutely horrible. I think
well, episode,
is kind
episode
of,
5 is going to explore something different. She's with a guy this time, so maybe something else will happen.
But,
it's basic carry Yamato to me. Oh, jeez.
Based off of this whole discussion, it's very curious to me how we can like CrossAnge, even though...
You do see
overall,
my confusion now.
Yeah. It is a very garbage show. Like we've been talking about it on Mechanorn, and I was just kind of like, you know, just kind of, you know, eye rolling and face palming during discussion points of episode 3. Like, yeah, this is really stupid and it's really dumb, or this could have been better. But
it was like, oh, death. Everyone's dying. It's a robot. Ange doing something.
Yeah, but I think it's, and it's not like the Yuri is good or anything.
No,
or the action is necessarily good, but there's something about the total package, I guess, that's just working for us.
Yeah, I think we just want to see how much Ange can go through before she snaps. I think that's what we're waiting for. I think
you can
like how much
you can
you
like
this character through?
Just
I'm rooting for Angie. I think
me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So am I. I think she's pretty cool. You can like something just for the footprint that it leaves behind when you get right down to it.
Mm-hmm. All right, and for my better than I thought, is Gundam Build Fighters Try. Now, I had not watched any of the first season. I kind of knew what it was, Gunpla, and they compete, and I'll pass on that. But it is possibly one of the most refreshing Gundam series that I've seen, because you watch Reconquista, and I like that show, but it's going through the motions of every Gundam series you've seen in the past. There's a lot of political stuff, and a lot of confusion, a lot of betrayal, a lot of death, and all that stuff. But Build Fighters is just kind of like a fun series. It takes away all of that politics stuff and turns Gunpla into competition. And what I'm seeing in these first three episodes that I assume is the case of the first season, there's a nice consistency to it, that it's one of those shows that I can go to each week feeling like I'm going to enjoy this, where I watch a show like Psychopaths and I'm looking at it in an analytical way, or you know, maybe like Fate Stay Night or something like that. Kind of reminds me of like Mushishi. Not of course the tone is very different in those two shows, but the show is just enjoyable, and I really enjoyed the Gundam fights that they have in that show. It looks really cool, and of course, for Gundam fans from many years, there's all kind of references to things that they say, and the Gundams that you see on the show. It is very entertaining.
Yeah, I'd say it's very fun. Like you said, it's very different from what typical Gundam usually is. Like you said, it's usually war, people dying, there's political stuff, and any length-wise, it's, you know, those are 50 episodes. Build Fight is usually 25, and when its first season came out, it's very surprising that, you know, Gundam, you know, Sunrise built almost built their house on Gundam, I would say, and for them to take their beloved series and turn it into like a, I guess, kind of a sport competition type of show, it's very interesting for me. And like you were saying, the battles every week, and you know what you're getting into every week. It's not going to be, you know, you're not going to get it's going to be a fan service episode. It's like, no, it's pretty much, they stay away from stuff like that, but. And the characters are very likable. Yes. I mean, season one has a ton of characters, and like I found myself liking basically every character they showed. There wasn't a single one I didn't like, so it's pretty funny. Even villains. But yeah, seeing villains in that series is kind of weird, because, again, it's not, no one's getting killed, there's no war going on. it's just kids playing battle, you know, these model kids. So.
And the worst that can happen is that your gunpla just kind of breaks into pieces.
Right, yeah. And it's not like someone's going to get blown up or anything. So.
And you're talking about villains, like we saw like a fight against a girls' school, and Gyanko has immediately fallen for Sekai.
Yeah, and the show, there's a lot of shipping. I think the creators know that fans will ship people, because season one, like I think Emre even said that there's a ton of couples in that. They're not, I guess canon couples, but they're always together. There's always male-female pairings and gun and build fights, so it's kind of funny.
Kira, Locus.
Yeah.
Alright, so Fosh, what was better than you thought it'd be?
Yuki, Yuna, that was pretty interesting. I mean, going in, I thought it was going to be just a club show about these girls that go around helping people in the hero club they make. And because first episode, you see them, they're doing a puppet show for these little kids. And, they're helping the community out and just doing stuff like that. And they throw in an interesting twist to episode one that the girls are actually magical girls in this series. And I did not expect that. And even the summary of the short show didn't say anything about magical girls when I first read it. So just seeing that thrown in there kind of caught me by surprise. I wasn't really expecting it. And, a lot of people, when it first came out, first episode, everyone instantly called them Madoka clone because of the world that they're in. Because the backgrounds are kind of freaky. The monsters they fight are freaky looking. And that, to me, just kind of turned me away from that. I didn't really want another Madoka clone, because I feel almost any kind of time that a dark magical girl show comes out, it always gets that comparison. Yuki Yuna is not really dark, in my opinion. It's just more, it's very bright colors and everything. So I'm like, how's it, for me, I don't see a Madoka clone, but it's people do. And some of the characters are interesting. I mean, we have a girl that's in a wheelchair. That's, anime doesn't really do much of that. So I was kind of curious. I'm like, they're going to do something interesting with that later on. So it's very different for me as far as magical girls go. I like that one.
Not since Code Geass have I noticed a girl on a wheelchair.
Right, yeah.
Normally.
Yeah.
Yeah, there have been a few over the years.
I feel like there's has Nanoha? To be more.
Yeah, Nanoha. Yeah, Nanoha has one.
Yeah.
That's probably a
Guilty
lot
Crown?
Yeah,
Guilty Crown.
That's the biggest
one. Guilty Crown. How could we forget Guilty Crown?
Turns into a strike witch.
There's lots of reasons why.
Right, yeah. And, with Yuki Yuna, you would think, oh, she's going to transform, she's going to get cured. But they don't actually do that. They, she transforms and she still isn't able to walk around. So, I mean, I think that's kind of interesting. I mean, it's a small detail. It's not anything major, but it is, kind of credit to the studio for doing, I guess, something different.
All right, cool. Now we get on to our favorites of the season, the show that we're enjoying the most. Min, get us started.
So mine is Shingeki no Bahamut. Which is this? Well, I learned of this after the fact, but apparently it's based on a mobile game, a free-to-play game called Rage of Bahamut. So, I went in not really expecting anything because I hadn't really heard of this franchise at all before. But the first episode just blew me away with its animation, and it's kind of a medieval fantasy show, and there was a lot of combat in the first episode and in the second episode as well. And both of them just had such beautiful animation that it was just stuff that you're not accustomed to seeing from TV anime. This is more like stuff that you watch in a movie, and like a well-animated movie. And so to see that from the start and continuing on, it was just, I was really blown away. And as far as I can tell, I haven't seen the fourth episode, but as far as I can tell, this is not stopping anytime soon. It continues with the really, really good action, great animation. And I mean, for me, that's really enough to keep me staying. But I also find the story, fairly interesting. The main character, he's kind of a scoundrel, but he's a little lovable too. And the main girl, she's kind of a mystery, but she's also pretty cute. And I loved seeing her dance in the second episode, especially.
Yeah.
And I think there's like the main character's rival who looks a lot like Space Dandy. Mm-hmm. And like, I really like how these characters bounce off each other and they constantly run into each other, get into battles, get into fights, conflicts, and yeah, I think it's just got the whole package. Great animation, good characters, and it's a lot of fun.
Technical note, the voice of Favreau that you're referring to is actually the voice actor that played Meow.
Oh, that's right.
Dandy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you got your Space Dandy connection right there. Just kind of, you know, shifted 180 degrees in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like of the shows that basically debuted this season, that Bahamut has been the surprise, considering what the premise read as just like it's a card game adapted to an anime. But people saw the CG or the trailer and they thought that looked pretty cool.
I want to say the opening, it gets me hyped with my time I listen to it. I'm like, yeah. Like a pure rock opening, like, oh yes, so good.
All right, Skyline, how about you?
Shocking truth, it's Hitsugi no Chaika, Avenging Battle. We continue on from our spring season into the second quarter of the show, and they didn't let up. I was really impressed by the first episode, as I said in my first impression coverage of it, that they knew how to layer and they knew how to pace in, you know, callbacks to what was happening, and yet at the same time still advancing the action, still advancing the characterization at the same time. It didn't stall. And I love a program that does that. You know, please keep on doing that. Please take notes, future writers, that this is what you're supposed to be doing. You engage your audience. You don't bore them. And from that point, it's just continued to go on to be very intriguing. They add little tidbits to the world background, give you a little bit more about Gaz and about what his mechanizations are and what this thing called Chaika is. And along the way, they're making you look kind of at what identity is and how are you fated to have this particular identity, or is it your hand at the wheel which guides your life? So they always ask those sorts of questions, and it's been an endlessly fascinating show for me.
Yeah, I like the second season so far. They're definitely speeding through the collecting the body parts. I noticed that. And episode 4 kind of left me a shocker. A certain someone that we thought died is apparently not. I'm like, okay.
That's
possible.
And they kind of put him in the corner.
Yeah,
just a brief cameo. And
I'm
then,
like, what the
you know,
hell?
I knew they would shift him around a little bit. I knew there would be some circumstances where he would have to come back maybe different or on the wrong side or something like that. So I'm glad that paid off, but I'm glad they made it a tidbit too.
Yeah, I was like, it would be funny if he comes back as like a Melchica. The first season did that. If someone died, that, you know, they brought another one back. That, so I'm like, that's interesting.
That Gee, he can do anything, I tell you.
Right. And now the new plot is, I guess, it's an island that she's trying to find this treasure. So I'm guessing that's going to be the final showdown. So I'm guessing that like they're getting ready to wind it up here soon. I guess the plot anyway. Yeah. I think so.
Which is why this season will be only 10 episodes.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, they just got 6 more left over. But, you know, I have to point out, my goodness gracious me, Frederica, get a bit more useful, girl. You're getting crap. You know, last season she just got basically, you know, thrown into the dumpster and then crawled her little way back out and just, you know, shook her cute little behind and says no big deal. And now she's just kind of like this, oh, whatever, this sounds amusing, I'll go along. Oh goodness gracious, my wings have cleaved off and crashing now. It's like, my goodness, girl, get into the game.
Yeah, season 1, someone made a compilation of like her deaths and put it like Dark Souls. I was like, it's so true, he dies so many times, like Dark Souls. Oh.
There's a t-shirt that they made.
Yes, thank you for finding
Chestbuster, whatever.
Yeah.
I was about ready to say something for the next live show in comments, since I show my face on it. Vote if you want me to get the Chaika, the Frederica Chestburster t-shirt, or a Shinobu shirt. Either one. I'll do it.
Oh, I want the Chestburster one. It's all good.
Yeah.
Both. Wear both.
Yeah, both. Cut them in half, sew them together.
Oh, sacrilege.
So.
We'll just wear one over top of the other, then take it off halfway through.
Hey, why do that?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think it would make sense to wear the chest burst one underneath the shinobu.
See, there we go.
Playing ahead.
All right, and as for my favorite of the season, that would be Fate's Day Night, Unlimited Blade Works. kind of odd because, you know, we know what to expect of the show. We're, in a way, we've kind of seen the story before. There was the movie before and the start, you know, I had seen back in like eight years ago with the main series. Although now we're just getting it in like glorious, ufotable HD animation. And episode 3 was just incredible with the action in that episode, as Berserker was just a completely dominant force. Saber being able to do a little bit and Archer not doing that much, but, you know, huge explosions and stuff. And the fighting between Ilya and Tosca was good. So just a fantastic series, as we've expected and hoped for.
Yeah, for me, it's like if Michael Bay did Fate Zero or Fate Zero Night, this is a series. It's everything's blowing up everywhere.
Don't equate that.
I'm just saying all the explosions and stuff. Anyway, I mean, but I felt kind of bad afterwards. I'm like, someone's got to clean that graveyard out. Mm-hmm. All those headstones are gone. Like, wow.
It's kind of like getting back to the discussion about Parasite with the flying dog. It's like huge explosion in a graveyard.
Right. No one sees this. No one hears this.
Yeah. Not pay attention to that.
Yeah, I think
like the show because it seems like, you know, I mean, I'm not familiar with the VNs, and I've never seen the Dean show because I've been threatened that if I watch it, Keel will kill me. And, you know, you take that threat seriously as much as you can. And so it kind of feels like I have seen Fate Zero, loved it. I have, of course, seen Prism Ilya multiple times. And it feels like this show is pretty much self-contained for people who might not have read the VNs or experienced the previous series. It just seems like they just basically scrapped everything, said we're going to take the parts that are good, we're going to animate those, we're going to string together a really good story. And then we're going to make little nods and little references to Fate Zero, little nods and references to the VN, and just kind of keep, like, make a bigger core audience than they possibly could have.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Well, from what I can tell, I think it is adapting Fate Stay Night Unlimited Blade Works straight up. Like, I haven't seen any sort of twists that they've added to it. And, like, even Rin's opening episode, that's from the visual novel, where the first or the prologue was told in the from Rin's perspective. It would have been pretty nice if the entire series had gone from her perspective. I think that would have been neat. But yeah, this I think UFO Table has if they haven't already, like, this, they have truly established themselves as like the premier action-focused animation studio. You know, with their work in things like Karana Kyokai, Fate Zero, they've done an incredibly good job. And Unlimited Blade Works, I think, so far has been their best work, at least in terms of action. The first episode, second episode, latest episode, they've all contained some really spectacular set pieces that have just been a joy to watch. I'm not sure which show has had better action, this one or Bahamut, but I know I'm really enjoying both.
Yeah. As a side note, it's called this series Unlimited Budget Works for them. It's they got some budget in this series.
Yeah.
Whenever I watch the show and then try to watch something else after, it just always looks so crappy in comparison. Just so nice. I wish everything could look like this.
Can I do every anime, please?
Where's the awesome dial on this anime? Come on, I want to crank it up a little bit more. One of the things I noticed in the third episode was some of the sound design. Because, you know, usually in combat, especially big combat like that, you expect to hear some of the same crashing noises and some of the same sounds that we would associate with, like, you know, magical sounds.
Right.
But they went a different direction. Those birds that Ilya was playing around with, they made these really creepy, unearthly noises that just bugged me. F when I was watching that. And then I went back and rewatched it, and Berserker, some of the sounds he was making when he was just catapulting himself off the ground felt very atypical to what you would be used to. It really added to the shock and impact of it.
They didn't borrow from the Toei soundboard of those typical sounds.
Or anyone's sound libraries. They went out and made up their own.
Banging garbage can tins together.
That's Sunrise. There, in a nutshell, they always import the same sound effects.
But yeah,
good.
I'm sorry. That just goes to show the amount of detail that Ufotable puts into Fate's Day Night is that even the sound is very unique and noticeable when we watch it.
Yeah, that goes so far as to break someone's arm. Actually, break their arm to get a sound effect.
Yeah.
Like, so, good job. Well, your arm.
You know, we go back to some of the shows we've been hailing, things like Shingeki no Bahamut with really good animation to it, and even Chaika to a degree from Bones, even though they could probably do it considerably better. And you can look at that and you go, wow, these are animators that they're anxious to show up to work the next day. These are people that are working on this that are just insanely happy that they're involved in this.
Or they're being held at gunpoint.
Hopefully the former and not the latter.
Yeah. You better draw that.
Just having a beautiful moment. Thanks.
No problem.
And while that's my favorite show of the season, my favorite thing is Rin Setai Ryuiki.
Oh, so yes.
I think hers is the strongest.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the S-class defining Setai Ryuiki.
That's the whole episode one was all that. That's all it was. How many shots can we give her, you know, her legs? Here we go.
She wasn't wearing stockings. She was wearing full hose.
At school, but after school.
After school, yeah. She goes for the stockings, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fosh, what about your favorite?
With Natsuno Taizai, which I've read some of the manga, and it's a fantasy series about, I guess, the seven deadly sins, which are these seven knights that, I guess, each of them represent, you know, the same as the Fullmetal Alchemist, represent a sin, and, you know, this girl named Elizabeth is trying to find these seven knights, so she's on this quest to find the knights to, I guess, save her kingdom that is under, I guess, under attack. There's a lot of, like, political things going on with, you know, the king, when the king's been killed, and so there's some backstabbing going on in the kingdom, so someone's trying to overthrow them, but yeah, it's got, you know, a lot of comedy. From my experience, Yuki Kaji's the main, and he's actually likable in the series. I mean, I usually hate him a lot, but he's kind of a pervert in most episodes. He's always doing something to the main girl. And the main girl just kind of, like, goes with it. She doesn't really, you would think she would scream and hit him, but she doesn't do anything. I'm like, that's kind of weird, but I guess because she's a princess, so maybe she doesn't know any better. I don't know.
Or she likes him, and she just doesn't know how to say it.
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
I don't think she likes that.
Yeah, I don't think she does either, but...
Especially the panties thing.
Yeah, I was like, that was confusing. He got him off or somehow. I'm like, okay.
Although when I saw the clones, I thought, oh, that's how they're going to prove who the real one is.
Right, yeah, they do. And, yeah, the series has a lot of good action moments. I mean, there haven't been many. But the first episode was kind of like this Dragon Ball Z type fight where you have this little kid who you don't think he's very powerful at all. And he just basically almost levels a whole forest by himself. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, he's just... And the animation's a bit old school. It's a Dragon Ball. It does look like a little bit like Dragon Ball. Especially the villains. They look kind of like they're kind of that art style. But yeah, overall, it's an entertaining show. It's a lot mixed of comedy, story, and interesting action, and soundtrack by the guys that did, you know, Aldo Zero and Guilty Crown and all those shows. So soundtrack's pretty good. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like them, it's more of like a fantasy type of soundtrack, but it's pretty good.
It doesn't sound the same as... those shows.
Definitely not, think. Yeah.
Like, it's a different style, which I guess is refreshing in a case.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, we're going to throw these techno beats in here and then some you know, dubstep. No,
a bunch
it's
of
just...
epic music awesome. And stuff. Mika Kobayashi, free languages.
Yeah, yeah. True.
Yeah, but I like the show, too. And Meliodas is a really cool character. He's like a crazy strong character.
Right,
despite
yeah.
the look, and even in the match against the guy from the guard or
Gil Thunder, whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that, he's pretty cool.
He looked in control even when they made it look like the episode was going to end with Meliodas dying. He just gets up at the end after the credits, like, all right, we're good.
I think that's why I like him so much so far. He's not a character that's flaunting his power. He's not like I'm super powerful. I can do whatever I want. He's kind of like just going through the motions, basically trying to be like a normal dude. But if you get him to fight, he defends himself, but he doesn't. He's not going all out. You can tell he's not.
Yeah.
He's not super serious about fighting right now. So we'll see what happens later on. And they introduced Diane, this giant character, which I've never seen giants. You know, in anime that become part of a main cast. For me, it's always One Piece has giants, but to see actually a character that's actually a character that's going to be a part of the cast is very interesting. It's like,
it'll be weird because there will be so many scenes where you'll see like Meliodas and Elizabeth talking, and just off to the side, you'll see a huge leg just coming up.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it is fantasy, and that's, you know, as fantasy as I think it can get, having a giant. I mean, besides, like Chaka has a dragon. I mean, if he had a dragon in, like, ties, that would fit perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. There was, especially since they have a giant pig going around carrying the pig, so she kind of fits in when they're walking with a giant green pig.
Yeah, and that was weird because I saw the most recent episode how they had a tracking shot with Melodious, Elizabeth, and Diane all in the same shot. And the way they had it, it kind of looked like a little bit like Diane was in the foreground because her head was larger.
Right.
And they kept that goal for a little bit so they could establish communication between the three. And then they had Elizabeth move across her, right in front of her, to kind of reinforce the fact that she was a giant. So they're playing with that really well.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I think it's A1 Pictures doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, they're doing a pretty good job with it, and I can't wait to see more. It's very fun.
I generally like what A1 does in a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Over cool.
Looks like I'm the only one that didn't choose an action show, but there were a lot of good shows, so I had a lot of difficulty picking, but in the end I went with Mushishi Zokusho, the second half. It's really just the continuation of the second season, just more of the same good old Mushishi. And I'm really picking it just because, you know, it's basically, I don't know how to say it, it's just a masterpiece, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's one of the shows that does everything right. So the pacing's perfect. You have this amazing main character who is such a simple guy, but you find yourself so drawn to him as he's traveling through this mystical world. And just the whole concept of Mushi, these creatures that could be really anything, just, you know, a rainbow, they could be something that makes you deaf, something that makes you blind, they can be absolutely anything. And it's that freedom of creativity that kind of makes it work so well. Such a simple concept, but it can really go anywhere, and they really do take it anywhere, and they come up with some amazing ideas for each episode. And even though we're only two episodes in, and I've only seen one of those episodes, this is definitely my favorite. Yeah, I'll catch up on that soon. I'm blogging the show, but don't worry.
Mushishi always, you know, we have a lot of shows to where, you know, you have the idea of what prose is. You start off with a point, and then you start building out. You start building your script. Mushishi always kind of felt more like poetry to me, where you take all of these amazing, wonderfully evocative things, and then collapse that onto one poetic point, and let that be suggestive. Let the member of the audience kind of think it over and mull it over.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It leaves a lot to the imagination, because there's a lot of moments where it's just silence, and it leaves you to kind of fill in the blanks and kind of see things your own way and interpret that poetry, if you will, however you want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the anime just nails everything that it wants to do so well. Like, it's very minimal with the music a lot of times, and the subject of nature and adding Mushi into there and having all of these unique personal stories. A little bit of a spoiler for what happens in the second episode, it's kind of an endless eight thing, but it's kind of really interesting to see, you know, sometimes not every story ends well. Sometimes people just kind of, I think there was one story in season one about it was like a deer or something, and people just don't want to listen to what Ginkgo has to say. But on the subject of Ginkgo, I liked that the first episode was about him. I don't remember if we've ever seen his other eye before.
If you've watched the first season, there's a explanation of how he loses his eye, so it's even before this episode. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there really is not much we know about his past. So this is like maybe the second episode ever about his life.
Yeah, which is good because we just like following him so much, but it's nice to get an episode here that focuses on him.
Do you think they make the limited budget work in its favor?
I think so. I think it still looks really nice. And, you know, the backgrounds and everything, they still look really detailed. The nature shots look great. I think they get away with it because there's not
that much motion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of still shots, a lot of just someone talking over a super panned out shot of a background. And it's a money saving tactic, but it's not done in a way that looks cheap, like, say, World Trigger. Mm-hmm. It's done in a way that's, you know, artful.
Yeah, and the tone of the show is very slow. So, I mean, the most you're going to see in terms of animation is like snow falling down or the Mushi kind of moving around pretty slowly. Things very rarely ever get crazy, except for the one episode with the guy that was whistling and calling in the birds. And then, you know, just chaos broke out at the end of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was snakes or something. I can't remember.
Oh, don't remind me.
Oh, yeah. That was creepy as hell.
I was going to say, it definitely sounds like it would be on my watch list. I mean, I'm going to get around to it eventually. Mm-hmm. But I hear you guys, you know, I must praise you guys give it. I might check it out here soon.
It's one of those classics.
So I even hear.
Yeah, it's a twofer. I think maybe you might be stretching it to watch three at a time when you get right down to it, because that might be too much to take at one given point. So if you can get through two, three episodes at a time, you'll do good.
Yeah. You need time to sort of sink in the subject after watching it.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
If you watch it 3, 4, 5
yeah,
in a row.
It sounds like Book of Friends to me was like that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't watch one episode and I had to keep watching more. It's like, it's very addictive. Like, you want to know more about the characters. So I think that's what I'm getting with you guys with this series.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so we have one more category here that's honorable mention. We can just kind of talk about whatever we want that hasn't really been discussed yet. So we'll start off with Skyline.
Yeah, it's very rare that we cover a lot of short animes during this time. And so I'm going to lead off with Yama no Susume, the second series of that. I believe, when was it? Was it winter of this year that the original series came out?
I think so. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, but it was like a 5 to 6 minute long short. Now they've expanded it up to 12 to 14 minutes right now. And it's typical of cute girls doing cute things, but the cute things they're doing is mountain climbing.
And so yeah.
Like we go back with Overcool talking about Mushiki, there's that love of nature, but it's a cultivated nature. It's a tamed nature when you get right down to it. So, you know, the activity is what they do, and they become they don't come obsessive level detail of it, but they cover very briefly things like, you know, the appropriate climbing gear to get, you know, be prepared for whichever trail you're going on, you know, dress appropriately. You know, drink when you're thirsty, eat when you're hungry, rest when you're tired, and they reinforce that. And what I really loved was about 4 weeks ago, around during a 10th, 11th, 12th episode, right before the season break in October, they had their Great Mount Fuji expedition, and the main character, she couldn't make it to the top. And, you know, in a lot of typical anime, it's like, you know, you have main characters that fail at their objective, and it's always chalked up, oh, they're 100 years too early, or they don't have the right Dragon Ball, or something, you know, something that they can go on a quest and get. But this one was just that very, very hard thing to deal with, that she got altitude sickness. Nothing she could do about that. It's just a thing that happened to her, and she had to take that defeat, and she had to take it with whatever grace she could. And, you know, she felt terrible when she got back down off the mountain. You know, she had two others going up ahead of her, and they got to see the sunset like everyone talks about, and she didn't. And I like a show that has enough confidence in its characters. They built up enough confidence in their characters to be able to discuss, you know, real failure like that without any sort of fantasy tropes going on around it.
Yeah,
and that still come out positive.
It's like Yamushi Petal does that too with the main guy. The first race he's in, he's not very good at it. He's pretty much sucks. But he gets better.
He's not used to endurance pedaling. He's just used to traveling around fast or something like that, right?
Right.
Yeah, I've really... Sorry, just to follow up on your comment, I've also been really enjoying Yama no Susume. Because, you know what? It really does actually cover a lot of the basics of mountain climbing, and at first it almost felt more like documentary-like. But, you know, it really does go into the more emotional parts of mountain climbing and struggling to try to achieve your goals. And, you know, sometimes you just don't achieve them. Like, that's just what happens. That's just what life is. It's a I really do like that realistic take on it. It's been a really surprising show for what they cover in 12 minutes.
The uphill battle.
Yeah. And the OP is written by Tom Hack. And I love the show's OP. And Tom Hack wrote most, if not all, of the OP and ED for K-On.
I was like, Tom Hanks? What?
Tom Hack.
But yeah, it is a good opening song.
As for me, I'm going to give an honorable mention to Shiro Bako, which I believe is Japanese for making anime the anime. Because that is what this anime is all about. And with the exception of episode 2 at the end, where they were all gathered around the table and there's that fantasy thing, which was really ridiculous. The show's been playing it very straight with the process of making an anime series and the, you know, the trouble with episode 4 and working on episode 9 also and all these other things that... It's been really fun to watch, even though it's not, you know, necessarily, you know, a funny show or anything like that. It's not, it doesn't feel tropey that much. And also, I appreciate that they're putting the character names in their role as, like, credits while the episode plays and when they first appear, because there's a lot of faces, and I know some, but... You know, with so many people involved, I can't remember all their names, so I'm always appreciative of when they put up the director's name or the, like, the character designer's name.
Yeah. I'm glad they don't expect us to know all of these names, and they actually give us these names to kind of let you know it's okay to not really know who's who, to just kind of enjoy it as it goes.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like... tackling characters is like job descriptions in a way, because you know them by what they do more so than by their name or anything like that, but they do put the name up there just to keep it handy.
Right. I was going to say, it may not be 100% accurate of like how anime is made, but it looks pretty close. And there's one guy which they would fire, that's the Mohawk kid. They need to fire his ass. I think
he's Taro. That's like the only name I know. Yeah,
he is so terrible. It's his reason why they're behind. Ugh, hate that guy. And it showed me like the episode that,
because he snaps the most.
I guess it was the director, I guess, but he was talking about the character expression, how it kind of surprised me how that little slight change can basically turn the whole entire series upside down. Mm-hmm. Just for one little, you know, 2-second animation clip. How, you know, the last minute, it kind of sucks the last minute you got to change, do a little quick change.
And then on the flip side, how quickly the character design can change just by one little line that you drew.
Right, yeah, one little line and... you know, the character, the age of the character, personality-wise and all that, how much dedication it takes to actually put into a series kind of surprised me. Mm-hmm. You know, just thinking, oh, well, she likes this kind of food, so she's this kind of character. Like, that little detail is kind of interesting to me, because, you know, I am curious about how they make anime. You know, it's not like a Disney production, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So.
Kind of like a voyeuristic thing, just to see how they make anime, because it is interesting. Like, we're anime fans, we're watching anime all the time, so of course we have at least some curiosity about where it would come from.
Yeah, it kind of gives us a more appreciation of what they do. I mean, the hours they spend on anime and lack of sleep. Like, that one girl passed out. Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
She found her almost, like, dead in her apartment. Like, that's creepy.
Yeah, it's kind of like we can complain about World Trigger's animation, but on the whole, it is kind of a miracle sometimes that things get animated.
Yeah, that's true.
Fosh.
I went with Shingatsu wa Kimi no Uso, which is Yuli in April. And I usually don't pick these type of shows because they're, you know, it's usually the drama. It's like, oh, you know, romance drama. Usually the same thing for me. But I think I like the music twist in this show. It's very heavily centered on music. I don't play music, so I don't really know how hard it is. But for me, it's like you can take that concept pretty much with anything. If it was about two animators, you could do that and a story about them. You could do almost anything that's like a job, but these two main characters are interesting. I mean, even the side characters are kind of there, and you obviously can see what the triangle is going to form between all these characters, who's going to like who, and all the drama that's going to come with it. But yeah, I'm interested in seeing what happens with the main characters. I know the main girl has a past that I heard that was kind of bad, or something that happened to her. There's something about her past that was kind of shocking to people that read the manga. But yeah, I'm interested in seeing what happens with these characters and whether romance actually is, if there's any romance between them or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's just a she likes him because he was famous. You know?
Oh yeah, I admit that watching the first couple episodes, I was kind of like indifferent to the series because there's kind of a self-awareness element about this thing of your friend A and stuff like that that I just wasn't quite liking. But what would happen is that the final scene would happen in these first two episodes, and I was like, well, you know, I'm interested to see what happens here. And by episode three, now I'm pretty much committed, even though, you know, that was a very, as Highway notes in his post, I believe, a very blatant use of symbolism there with he's in the darkness, and now he steps into the light when he wants to play for her.
Yeah, I saw that too. I'm like, oh, wow, that's right to the point, huh? And it seemed weird, yeah. Go ahead.
He could drop that line. It's like a scene from a movie. Anytime he wants to, and that'll probably improve the show dramatically.
Right.
I'm in love with this one. I'm. It's not exactly the same, but I'm getting those same kind of Doki Doki feelings that I got when I first watched Toradora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just feels like there's something very special, very interesting, very neat happening with these characters, and you gotta get used to their barbs. You kind of gotta get used to their middle school ways all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always forget that they're actually middle schoolers. I'm like, because the main kid's like 14. I'm like, he doesn't look 14, but okay, thanks anime. Sure, why not? Let's go with that. But yeah, I mean, I like the in the colors and the animation and everything looks really good. I haven't really seen a dip in animation yet, but I assume it will be some later on. I mean, I think it's 25 episodes.
22.
Oh, 22. Oh, wow, 22.
It's another A1 show. Talked about them before.
Right, yeah.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that's fun.
Speaking of that, Shirobaka, I like the GI staff.
Oh, the first episode? Mm-hmm. Oh my god, it was funny. Like the drift racing, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
That had me laughing so hard. I'm like, I want them to do like drift racing anime. Just take out the parts of the anime and just do that. You know, do the drift cars? Racing. Yeah, let's do that. It'd be amazing.
Overcooled. You have any to mention or no?
Yeah, I'll just throw a quick shout out to Arentino Furo Jijo. I'm not sure exactly what that translates to. Something about there's a mermaid in my bath or something like that.
I'm watching that too. Oh my god.
Oh, Bosch is watching it too. Good job.
Hilarious.
So the title says it all. It's about a guy who finds a mermaid, takes him home, puts it in his bath. There's lots of suggestive things happening, like an octopus giving him a tentacle massage. That's what he chooses to call it.
That was so wrong.
Edit. It's not a mermaid. It's a merman.
Merman. Merman. My apologies. And another great thing about the show is, although it's a comedy and it's only a couple minutes long, if you watch the opening song, it is this incredibly hardcore J-rock song with all these black and white visuals, intense of a merman, with really intense facial expressions. This guy almost drowning, like this really super dramatic opening. And then it opens up to this like smiling blonde mermaid in a bathtub being like, hey, feed me dinner, immediately after the opening song. So even if you're not watching the show, you should do yourself a favor and just watch the opening.
I like the Evo when you go like super deformed mode. It looks so funny. It looks so cute. I'm like, his designs are so nice. And the octopus guy, yeah, he's very weird. He wanted to stay over, and he was getting used to that cushy life of staying in the guy's bathroom.
Yeah, the other guests are kind of cool.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see the other versions of merman.
Yeah, I think it's funny when they were trying to save energy or whatever. You put water in the bottles in the bathroom and all. It was pretty funny. But yeah, it's like you said, a short show, so it's, you know, almost like that. I can't stand what my husband is saying, that kind of short, and it's very slapstick, very funny. Even though the tentacle thing was kind of like, okay, what am I getting into? But yeah,
to a different audience, not for you, Fosh.
Right.
that scene.
Yeah.
For you.
All right, and Min, how about you?
So Fosh just mentioned the show. I can't understand what my husband is saying. Another short, I think each episode's like 6 minutes long. This is just kind of a comedy with a otaku husband and Actually, I don't even know what the wife does, but she's like a normal person, I guess. Voiced by Yukari Tamura, who is always a joy to listen to. I think it's just silly, fun, simple, bite-sized comedy. The story's a little confusing. I don't understand why they got married, because in the first episode they show the wedding, and they're like, yeah, I guess we should do this. Yeah, we're doing it. And then they show them at their honeymoon, and they're like, oh, hey. And then it just cuts to, and then they had a lot of sex. It's like, there's not a whole lot of passion in this relationship, as far as I can tell. In fact, I'm not even sure they are attracted to each other. But, okay, sure. Like, I feel like they could have done something more with that. Like, why are they together to begin with? Because the entire premise is a woman gets married to an otaku husband. That's like, how did we get here? But anyway, if you accept that premise, it's a decent enough platform to for all the funny stuff to happen. So yeah,
what's surprising is that it's about 4 minutes in length. Is that right?
Yeah,
exactly. I think it's like six including ending.
Well, either way, they jam so many bits and jokes into that episode. And what kind of surprises me is that I've seen so many shows like that where it just falls flat for me. But here, I think it works somehow. I think maybe it's playing a bit on like the otaku culture and kind of doing something a little unlike most other short shows, that maybe that makes it work for me.
Did anyone else die laughing when that latest episode when the brother that supposedly they think is a girl was with the other guy, and he's like, he's got a palm tree? I was like, I was dying laughing on that part. But I like the references. I mean, episode 2, I think it had an Evangelion reference, like the guy's face turned into one of the monsters. It's pretty funny. So there are like some slight references to the other anime. And I think there's been a couple Gundam, because the way they react to certain things, like they're shocked or something. Something happens. But yeah, I'm kind of like Min, like wondering, like, how do these two meet, you know, and why they're married? And maybe we should ask Highway.
the little ditty at the end, the little song that they have at the end, you know, with those two in the bathtub, I mean, they appear to be comfortable with one another. You know, I mean, you can't fake that sort of thing, really, when you get right to it.
Yeah, I do like the ending where they're just kind of rocking back and forth in the bathtub, and then she sticks her leg out at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're happy together, and whatever they choose to call happiness. So that's probably what the series is telling you.
And that dude makes money off his blog or whatever. I'm like, wow, living the life, huh?
Yes.
But apparently that's not enough for the wife, though. She's like, I can't tell my girlfriends that. Like, it makes sense.
All right, and that has been our discussion on the fall 2014 season so far. Of course, there were some shows we hadn't got to talk about, like Amagi Brilliant Park, which I believe Highway is blogging, the Ino Battle Within Everyday Life. I'm not sure who's blogging that show.
Smiley's blogging that one.
Okay. Psychopass 2 we didn't really get to talk about so much, the studio change and all that, Trinity 7, which Smiley's also blogging also. But all in all, it sounds like it's a pretty good season. Like, even when we were talking about garbage, you guys call it maybe kind of too strong of a word for some of the shows that you were throwing away in there.
We should call it recycle shows we want to recycle. Because they're not very good, but they're
into
okay.
A slightly better show.
Right, they could be better. Right, it could be better. I don't really have anything else to say about the season. It's just a lot of surprising shows. Because usually people go in the season going, this is going to be the terrible season. And you know, you hear that every time there's a new season announced. This is the worst season of blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't see that, but okay.
Never listen to it.
Yeah, I feel like people say all the time, well, it's not the most amazing season, but there's some shows. Like, well, yeah. I mean, nobody's going to watch every series.
I think this is an amazing
season. I watch everything. I'm just kidding. I don't watch everything.
I haven't watched this many shows in a season, I think, in a while. It's like, I don't want to drop one.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. It's a really good season.
I agree.
Shout out to Sora Method.
Sora No Method.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that one.
True.
I need more love. I I forgot to mention that one.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode maybe. And saw the crying. It was like, oh no, no, oh no.
Yeah, maybe that's another category we should have. Needs more love.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure. I do need to. I mentioned about changing these up this season, but you know, we really need to get on that for winter. It gets a little chilly. All right, so thank you for listening, listeners. Again, go to Metanorn on this episode post and vote on the thing about the live show. You can also vote on Skyline's shirt choice during the podcast. So do that for Fosh, for Overcooled, for Min, for Skyline. I'm Jero. We will see you next time on Metaverse.